Well, thank you very much. It's a real pleasure to be here in Chicago, all the way from the last great frontier in Anchorage. And I don't have anything to disclose in terms of conflict of interest. We're going to rock and roll through this. I have a lot of material. There's more detail available behind a lot of these areas. We're going to have an introduction to climate and sustainability in the Northwest Arctic Borough, which is the heart of the U.S.'s portion of the Arctic. Alaska is above the Northwest Arctic Circle. And the U.S. Congress has defined the Arctic to include that and another portion of Alaska. There's countries in the circumpolar north, and you may have heard that the president came up to Alaska and flew over Kivalina, a village that has a lot of problems with coastal erosion, and talked about climate change. We also had a State Department conference there called Glacier, Global Leadership in the Arctic. And so there's been a lot going on because the Arctic matters. The countries in that Arctic Council are the U.S., Canada, Denmark, which includes Greenland, Finland, Norway, Sweden, Iceland, and Russia. And we have an incredible opportunity now for the next year and a half. We took the chairmanship of the Arctic Council on April 24th. So ideally, a lot of this work would have been done the last 5 years, and we'd be just ready to rock and roll. It's evolving very quickly. So my premise here is that epidemiologists, environmental health, and public health practitioners of many specialties can contribute to the design of healthy, sustainable communities, improving the quality of life of populations through collaborative research and practice that connects environment and human health. So I hope at the end of my talk and this session, you'll realize that methods are important, but so are paradigms, and that we need to identify problems and we need to tackle them. And I hope you'll be encouraged to think about what difference this particular issue makes to people, and especially these populations of indigenous populations up in Alaska, and what you might be able to do. The premise is that partnerships can help. They're actually essential to create the evidence base for addressing climate resiliency in Arctic regions of the circumpolar north, and that these lessons learned may be useful throughout the globe. The Arctic does matter. Key stakeholders, some of these you may have heard of. There's a lot of, this is like learning French. There's a lot to learn, a lot of acronyms. And so I'm not going to go into too many of those. But one of them is the United Nations set up this IPCC, which is the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. There's been a UN framework on climate change, a convention. They call these things COP21, and this has been evolving over the last two decades. WHO is World Health Organization, as you know, and WMO is the World Meteorological Association. And acronyms, we all probably know the International Epidemiological Association, IEA, but there's also a lot of environmental organizations like the Chartered Institute of Environmental Health, and I've listed some others there, National Environmental Health Association, NGOs are for non-governmental organizations. So, in terms of environmental public health and epidemiology, I want to touch on who, what, and why, and developing priorities to address climate change and sustainability of communities. There are opportunities and challenges for future research and applications targeting the design and evaluation of environmental health interventions. Because after all, this isn't just about developing the evidence base to show there's a problem. It's really about what do we do about the problem. And that's the huge challenge. And when we have heat-related deaths, and we have this historical record looking backwards, what I'm going to suggest is things aren't going to get better in terms of the temperatures. So, and then I'd like to acknowledge some of my colleagues and collaborators. So the Arctic Borough, Northwest Arctic Borough, lies above the Northwest Arctic Circle in latitude. And so you can see here, too, the Arctic boundary featuring Alaska is defined by the U.S. Congress. And so you can see this is Alaska here. And this is Russia over here. And this is the Aleutian chain of Alaska. So we'll have more pictures here. This is in the Northwest Arctic Borough, and there are 11 communities within this boundary here. And the regional center of about 3,600 people is Kotzebue in Alaska. And we're particularly concerned. These villages are small. This is a satellite view from the air. This shows you where the Chukchi Sea is in the Arctic Ocean in relation to that area. This is a big deal. Shell has spent $7 billion looking for oil. Maybe 20% of our untapped reserves are in the that area in the Arctic Ocean, which includes the Beaufort Seas as well as Chukchi Seas. And this is also shows you a little bit of Southwest Alaska. There's 58 villages here. The regional center there is Bethel. And so these are just some demographic, a snapshot. We've looked at this over time. These populations are relatively stable, but the important thing is they're 95% Inupiat. Some of them are inland, and some of these others are all coastal villages. And so that's why the president flew over Kivalina, is because they had a severe storm. They have less shore-fast ice, and it took out 3 meters of the coastline. Well, it's right next to the gravel runway. So, you know, this is a picture up here on the above of Kivalina. And so they're slowly losing the small footprint that they have. It's a barrier island. So, and then Kayana is on the Kayana River. Real quick profile of the region. The borough was formed in 86, 11 communities. This place is roughly the size of Indiana, just for a geographic perspective. The region's remote and isolated, no connecting roads. 85% of the residents are Inupiat Eskimos, and unemployment's 15.6%. Medium household income 45,976, and 17.4% below the poverty level. Median population age is 23 years. 40% of the borough employment is government, compared to 25% for the state of Alaska. Both those numbers are pretty high, by the way. 46.6% female, long cold winters and cool summers. You'll like this temperature range, minus 52 degrees Fahrenheit. That's where you need all the parkas you can get, to 85 degrees Fahrenheit. And total precipitation, 9 inches per year. It's home of the Red Dog Mine, which is a copper and zinc mine, which was developed and has provided employment. And that's a really big deal. But there's also always issues with any resource development in Alaska because of all of the impacts. And then subsistence is very important and popular activity. Subsistence is basically living off the resources that are there. So, you know, the caribou and berries and all of those kinds of things. Hunting and fishing and trapping and all of those things are essential to indigenous populations in Alaska. It's much different than downtown Chicago. There's not much subsistence here in that respect. So renewable energy is an important thing because you can see prices where they're selling diesel fuel for $8 a gallon. So imagine that if you had to have a household budget with $8 a gallon. There's no natural gas pipelines, so heating oil and gasoline are used. Stove oil is $5 a gallon, and it's a median monthly expenditure of $530. So that $46,000 median, that goes very fast. Wood as an energy source varies from $120 to $500 a cord, and electricity costs $258 a month. So there's programs put in place to try to bring that cost down, but it's not your 15 or 20 cent per kilowatt hour. It can go 40, 50 more cents per kilowatt hour. And wind, biomass, solar, and geothermal sources, there's challenges because these communities aren't intertied. I've done some studies and a wind generator study, which, and if anybody's interested in, it's a kind of renewable energy and sustainable communities. And it compares the 1980s with 30 years later, what we have in Alaska. Okay, so I'm going to really try to rock and roll through these global trends. I won't be able to cover them in detail. This is an example of some of these scenarios. This was developed by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the fifth assessment. The working group one is the physical science basis for this, and you can see under these various scenarios how the temperature change in degree centigrade moves up. And there's a number of scenarios, and there's a lot of evidence behind this. I won't go into it, but those reports came out. This report was in 2013, but the IPCC issued its fifth assessment in 2014. Conclusions are Earth's climate is warming. Most warming since 1950 has been caused by human activities. Another term for that is anthropogenic. Warming's influenced in severity of many extreme weather events. And so in Alaska, there's particularly a problem when you have less multi-year ice and you have less shore fast ice. Because when these more severe storms come in, they tend to even come in sometimes and just wipe out infrastructure in communities. There's over 30 communities that have erosion problems, most of them on the coastline in Alaska. So although Kivalina and Shishmaref get a lot of the attention, and people think, oh, there's two villages that might have to relocate, the problem's much, much bigger than that, and it's very expensive to fix. So stabilizing the climate will require reductions of CO2 emissions. This is a paradigm on climate change with the direct impacts, how it impacts health via extreme weather, and we heard about heat waves and worsened air pollution. Influences on the natural and biophysical systems are like glaciers. Glaciers are melting. There are 12 glaciers that are extending, but there's 12,000 glaciers in Alaska, so most of them are receding. It affects pH currents, ocean acidification. There's influences on biological and ecological processes, so we need an ecological framework for addressing climate change. And then there's influences on social and infrastructure and property damage and all of those. So this is part of a comprehensive paradigm. And our global addiction to oil, this should be obvious from Pennsylvania when we discovered the first oil well. Lancet says climate change is the biggest threat, global health threat of the 21st century. You can see some of the examples there with cataracts and vectors and heat waves. Multiple risks. This looks like a war zone down here, but they're really just, that's an insecticide that they're. So I don't have time to go into the key findings, but each of these groups, the working group one is for the physical science basis of climate change, and it's about more warming. And permafrost is melting. That's an issue in Alaska. And there's evidence of 4.5 degrees Fahrenheit per month average increase in the Northwest Arctic Borough over the last 40 years. And summer ice is an issue. The Arctic is more vulnerable. That's because the effects are accelerated at the poles. And then we have effects on different species and ocean acidification, as well as risk from oil spills. Although Shell has, for the moment, said they're not going to basically go back into the Arctic. There's adaptation issues, and then there's mitigation issues. So you've heard of those before about, you know, the problem with fossil fuels. Okay, so the U.S. has a strategy for this. And I'm just going to mention we've got the leadership, and one of the things they accomplished, the Arctic Council, was this cooperation on aeronautical maritime search and rescue. And the second agreement here is on oil pollution preparedness and response. So now, is there something great that's going to come out next? Very quick overview, that there's the 8 council members. The permanent participants are indigenous groups. The Arctic is changing. They have various themes on sustainable development in this glacier conference I mentioned. And the working groups focus on biodiversity, marine environments, pollution, emergency response, and social issues. And there is legislation before that's created the U.S. Arctic Research Commission. And they have new task force because maritime transportation is important and a number of other programs in there. So just some quick pictures. This is Selawik. You can see drinking water is an issue with the Arctic boxes that go into the houses. Drinking water and sanitation improve all of these kind of disease rates. And that's the region in the far north. So we need research and applications and to integrate capabilities and implement policies and programs. And just a few more pictures of Alaska there. And I'll check with our moderator here to see if, do I have time to play the video? What's that?
Yeah.
Okay. So basically, I'm going to play a short video here. And the conclusions are that this is really an important issue, that we need more research and integrate capabilities, and Arctic environmental conditions are changing, and this is the coalface of this issue. And I'll leave you with this.
What the president is trying to do, but I'm wondering if there are any local policies, for example, at the state level, just to try and address this.
Okay. Well, I think although I've used the Alaska as an example of the coal phase, this is where the rubber meets the road, because of a lot of the physical basis and because of Alaska's geography, and it's really critical there that we do a good job and we learn some things from developing sustainable communities. This is a national issue and it's a global issue. So they're meeting in Paris to talk about emission limits, for example, and burning fossil fuels, and that's a big meeting coming up in a month. But the CDC is responsible for a lot of this in the United States and National Center for Environmental Health. And they, APHA has developed a BRACE framework, Building Resilience Against Climate. And there's efforts on in many, many states to address things. I think a lot of them are focused like in Maricopa County with heat-related deaths and mortality, excess cold-related deaths too, because there are changes that come in weather patterns and things with these trends. And there's a new book out on climate change and health, global climate change and health, that APHA has in the exhibit hall. So I think what we're going to see is an explosion of interest in the Arctic, and we need to basically look seriously at the paradigms we're using to identify the cause behind the causes. So this is a big problem, and it's a great challenge for epidemiologists, and I really appreciate your attendance here today. Thank you very much.